free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Hi guys, welcome to Breaking the Mold with Scent Though. I'm excited to announce on today's episode, we have Melissa Andrews, one of my closest friends, who's here to talk about her new book. It's called The Motions of Emotions. So thank you for joining us today, Mel.
That's okay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome. I'm really excited. You've mentioned that you did this book through lockdown as well. Mm-hmm. And I've read it. It's absolutely amazing. I enjoyed reading the book. There's so much to unpack with this book as well. So many chapters that I've been able to relate to. I think reading it, I was able to sort of deal with a lot of the emotions that I go through on a day-to-day basis as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's an excellent read. Just well done. Good job on that.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So why did you decide to write the book in the first place?
So this particular book, I started, because I never thought that I could or would ever be a writer, and it never crossed my mind. And then with everything that was happening during lockdown, and obviously having so much time on my own, it just kind of started coming out. I had so much emotion to channel. Obviously I had gone through a lot, and my sister's bereavement, of course. So a lot of things were happening at the time, and it was just, it's almost like a divine thing whereby it was just like I just picked up a pen and it just all flooded out of me. I was just writing it all out and channeling a lot of the excessive emotion that I was feeling, a lot of the pent up things, and I was analysing a lot and self-reflecting and figuring out, you know, why is this emotion arising and how to deal with it. And it was like a journey. It was almost like the book was written along the journey that I was going along at the same time. So it's all from the heart. You know, it wasn't preconceived almost. It was just like, that just felt like the right thing to do at the time. So I just started writing, and it thankfully all synced really well.
I imagine it must be very therapeutic, because I think, you know, you have all these emotions inside you and it can be overwhelming. And I find that sometimes just putting pen to paper and just letting it out, you know, it just can just be so therapeutic. It has to go somewhere. Yeah. It has to be channeled somewhere. Some people will write music. Some people like yourself will, you know, write books and whatnot. And other people like myself do podcasts.
Yeah,
various
ways. You just talk us to death.
Exactly. But you know, I think you mentioned this in your book. You know, if you've gone through this yourself, you're thinking, well, there must be other people like me out there.
Yeah.
But going through exactly the same thing, and I don't want them to go through this alone. So, you know, it's sort of sharing your experiences, and it helps you to connect.
Yeah,
people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being in that situation, I just thought, wow, you know, because I'd never had issues with mental health before, up until that point. And I just, when I've felt it, it was kind of like, wow, I can't believe people are going through this and, you know, suffering. Like, so thankfully through my healing, I thought, well, at least I can grab as much wisdom as I can and channel it out there to help even one person that might need a bit of guidance or, you know, a word of, because it's so confusing, being in that situation, that sometimes it's just one little piece of advice that can change your whole day and outlook. So, you know, if I can throw that book out there and someone picks it up and reads it, and, you know, if it makes them feel even a bit better, I'll be very happy about that.
Yeah. And I was saying to you earlier, I think had I read this in lockdown, because you're going through all the emotions in lockdown, you know, you're happy. Yeah. You're lonely. I mean, there was a lot of loneliness in lockdown, which you cover in the book as well. But at the same time, you actually spend a lot of time dealing with your emotions. So actually, it gives you a chance to reflect and process. And I think when I went through lockdown, it gave me an opportunity to really be comfortable with myself and actually reflect and think, right, okay, what does Scent Though need from life? Like, what are my values? You know, trying to get, get close to my core being, what is my authentic self. So in a way, start. I think lockdown has been a silver lining for some people because it enabled them to maybe take a different path.
Definitely. It's transformational. I think it was transformational for a lot of us. And I just look at it as though, you know, we went through that and we all went through it together. And, you know, we're emerging out of this cocoon, like with different insights, different perspectives on life. You know, our values are changing, we're realizing what was important to us and what wasn't important. The things that were a bad influence on us and the things that were good influence. And, you know, it's as bad as it sounds, like a lot of us needed that. We needed that break whereby it wasn't an option of, you know, having to call in sick or anything. You were told, no, you've got to stay home, because a lot of people will keep going and they won't stop. They will never have a break. So it was almost like we were told, no, stay home. We didn't have the option to get up and be anxious about work and stuff like that, because we were just told, no.
It's almost like a reset button. You're like, right, go at home. You have to now be with your thoughts, and we're constantly on the go all the time. You're busy working, you know, seeing friends or whatnot. So you actually have a chance to just sit still in your within your thoughts and you know, take a bit of time to reflect and think, right, okay, there's certain things in my life which aren't working for me. Making me unhappy. What do I need to do now to change that? I mean, you've called it the motions of emotions, and what's the reason for that?
So it was really because of the turmoil that I was going through, and how I was, you know, when you think of mental illness, you think that it is one linear line of just kind of depression, whereby I found when I was healing and all the things that I was doing, there were things I was doing which were making me feel good temporarily, but then something else would come up and I'd feel the turmoil again. So it was up and down, and it was just like I felt the, you know, it's in emotion that's not linear. It's kind of you know, we have this window of tolerance that we go up and down, and sometimes it goes above and sometimes it drops below. And it's just, you know, our emotions are so, they're so up and down. And that's where I come up with the title. I thought, well, I'm speaking about emotions being up and down. So, you know, emotions are emotions.
Absolutely. And I think this book, I think it's well structured, because you've got a number of emotions, from anger, I mean, you've got happiness, hatred, jealousy, you know, you've got guilt, you've got depression, trauma, grief. So what's lovely about this book is you can just, you know, if I'm coming home from work and I'm thinking, you know what, today I kind of felt a bit angry about something, I can just have a read of that chapter. So you don't necessarily have to read the whole book. You can kind of just pick, you can just cherry pick chapters which you think, you know, you're struggling with at the moment. So whether it is grief or whether it's trauma as well, you know, I think that's the way it's structured as well, is works well, I think, for people wanting to kind of just dip in, perhaps if they're on the go, you know, and they just quickly want to read a chapter. I think that works well.
Yeah, and I wanted it to be like that. You know, sometimes you're not going to feel all the emotions in that book, so you're not going to want to read through them over and over again. So I thought, well, if I can separate them, you know, you can just pick it up if you're feeling, you just want a little bit of a little bit of support, I guess. You can pick it up and just read a chapter, and hopefully, you know, it might help change your mood.
There is a lot of self-help books out there. You know, there's, you know, lifestyle gurus. I mean, what would you say separates your book from a lot of the other books out there?
I would say mine in particular is, it's a lived experience book. So everything that I've written about in that book is from my experience. It's not all researched and taken from other people. It's my journey, so my kind of take on emotions and what I did to overcome certain things. I'm not like a scholar or a clinical specialist or anything. I've got, you know, qualification in mental health, just a certificate level, but it's all from what I've learned through life and through that experience. So it's not, I've purposely written it in simple language. It's not like, you know, you don't need a degree to be able to understand the language in it. So I've written it purposely so to communicate with anyone that needs it. And I find some books are kind of written in this kind of clinical thick language that some people might not find it, you know, they might pick it up and not be able to penetrate the language, so they'll put it back down and then they won't get, you know, the advice that they need. So I've purposely kept the language quite simple in it as well.
I think it actually opens up discussions as well when you read the book. For example, I think there was a chapter, I think the first chapter touches on energy and how our bodies nerve some things out of balance. And you know, you mentioned about mental health that can lead to physical health conditions as well. And I actually found in lockdown, when I went through a lot of stress and, you know, depression, I just wasn't sleeping well at all. I was putting on weight as well. And yeah, I think I was just getting some really bad heartburn as well. So I think, yeah, I'm starting to get anxious. I'm like, right, okay, I'm starting to get anxious now. What can I do about this? It might just be having like a herbal tea to soothe me down a little bit. It might be trying to rationalize things a bit more. Or it might just be looking at, I don't know, sticking on a comedy or something like that. So I think it's trying to, for me anyway, just trying to be in tune with the body, and you know you talk about that well in the first chapter.
I learned so much about the body mind connection during the healing process. Like, you know, your body, it has to be told, kind of, you have to kind of work with it and let it know that it's okay to not be panicked. I didn't know that before, but your body has a response, and it's to keep us safe. And apparently it goes back to like caveman times, where we had to be alert to dangers. So our awareness is actually beyond our body. We can tell if something's nearby. We can actually sense presences and things because of our old caveman habits. We had to have that to survive, or we wouldn't have survived. That's something else I learned about, you know, it's how in tune our body is with, and what will happen is, if the body senses panic, even if there's nothing around, you'll get the symptoms. So you'll get the shaking and you'll get the feelings. And if you can't see what it is that's making your body shake or tremor, it can escalate it. And that's when you start to get panic attacks, because you can't pinpoint, oh, it's that, it's okay, it's, you know, it's nothing. So your body's still sensing, it's still on high alert. So the way to get rid of that, of course, is to start reducing it and kind of allowing your body to see that there's not a problem. And you just kind of have to work with it. And, you know, over time, that's what I did. And I managed to get it back into, you know, homeostasis, where it was at a balance again. And I think present moment meditation helped me a lot, just bringing myself back into reality and out of my head. You know, we have to kind of be where our feet are and just ground ourselves.
I mean, I admit I've not, you know, done a lot of meditation. I think I watched one YouTube video on meditation, but it's not something I have done, but it sounds like it really helps, you know, calm your mental health.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for everyone. And I don't believe in this thing of pushing people to do things that don't suit them, because I meditate, but I don't just sit there like, you know, singing Kumbaya or in the lotus position. There's other things I do for meditation. You can clean for meditation. You can write. You can play with, you know, my manager's telling me how she plays with a jigsaw. She's doing the jigsaw puzzles.
Really
I heard like Julie Carr, I remember him.
Colour.
Yeah, exactly. Colouring book. I make music, you know, I got into music production, so I've been making music as well. And I remember Jimmy Carr saying that during lockdown, he was saying that he gets anxiety and that he plays with Lego, you know. So you just do, you know, anyone can do what they want. And I don't like this whole thing of, oh, you have to meditate in this way, because anything can be a meditation. And that's what they kind of teach you in Buddhism, which is what I kind of found helped me a lot, looking into the Buddhism way of life and things and their principles. And that is what they say. Anything can be a meditation.
Whatever mm-hmm. works for you, there's no right or wrong way. Whatever, nope, you know, everybody's different. Not. And
exactly.
You know, whatever suits you and your body. Mm-hmm. So I think in the book as well, you do talk a lot about triggers, mm-hmm. you know, in the body, which, like I said earlier, can be specific smells or foods mm-hmm. or sounds. And actually, it just reminded me of this song. It's basically by Robin, Dancing mm-hmm. on My Own, I think. Have you heard
of it? Oh, I love that. It's a classic, yes. Oh, I love it.
This is the worst song. When this song comes on, right, it just reminds me of one of my worst breakups.
I just can't
listen to the song. And it made me think, gosh. You know, I need to try and just get through this song. I need to just listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's just my way of like, yeah, it's been dealt with now. Years ago. But for some reason, even now when it comes on, I'm just mm-hmm. like, no, I can't listen to it. It just reminds me of
your songs. Yeah, songs are very they're a very common trigger for people. So yeah, it's of course, like, that's a whole, there's so much emotion in music, and memories assigned to it, isn't there? So that's not surprising, but that is a bad breakup song, like, because it's already sad. So
not even sad, and you're just, you know, dancing on the dance floor by yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But I just thought, you know what, I need to kind of just listen to the whole song and then maybe mm-hmm. just see it as sort of like a blessing in disguise. It didn't work mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I'm now in a better relationship. So mm-hmm. I could probably just listen to it now, feeling happy about myself. But I think I think we all get into that habit sometimes, whether it's like a place or I don't know food that you've eaten with that person that you used to go out with, or
smell,
or anything. But it doesn't have to be a relationship. I think it could be you know, somebody that you used to know who's no longer here, that reminds you of those things that can trigger mm-hmm. mental health as well. So
definitely.
I found that interesting reading that chapter.
I mean, triggers are, I think they're so important to understand. This is why I talk about finding the core initiator, which is the core trigger that triggers you, because we have positive triggers as well. You know, there's music that makes us feel joyful because we've had a great memory with it. With things like triggers, the thing is to, once you've identified it, is there's so many things you could do. So you can just look at it from a different perspective, and you have to kind of change the emotion that comes up. You know, it maybe look at it as though, as you said, that was something from my past. That was something that I've lived through, that breakup. And now I'm in a better place. You don't have to be, you know, think the relationship was bad or anything like that. It's just, that was then, this is now. And, you know, you can kind of push through it. But I think I'm going to set you a task, Senf, to listen to that song and kind of work through it and see if you can change the memory, change the association with it. You have to kind of break that association with your ex.
It might be maybe just like listening to the song and maybe just mm-hmm. looking at pictures. I don't know, looking at my Facebook page and the pictures good, amazing memories that I've had recently mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. listening to that song, and then maybe I won't associate it with it is a decent song, and it's a shame that I'm rising above someone who hasn't apologized for their wrongdoings, which mm-hmm. I think is incredibly difficult when somebody has hurt you and mm-hmm. life goes on, you know, they mm-hmm. maybe don't apologize to you mm-hmm. and you just have to kind of accept that maybe they're just not going to admit that they're wrong, and you kind of just accept that and you move on mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people find it very difficult to forgive.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to you know, forgive someone without an apology. But I think when you think about it, who is it that's hurt in there? Who is it that's, you know, feeling that tension that they might not even be thinking about you? You know, are you going to let that person have that much power over you, over your happiness? Forget them, you know, forget it. And hopefully one day they might apologize to you. But if they don't, doesn't matter. Don't give them the key to your happiness. By sitting there and waiting for it.
And that's the thing. And sometimes actually resentment and hate can be such like a heavy emotion to carry with you.
Oh, definitely.
It almost just eats at you and it makes you unhealthy. And, it can make you stressed and it can impact you physically as well.
Yeah.
But like you said, the other person's probably just going about their day and not even thinking twice about it. I mean, has there been somebody in your life who has hurt you? Have you been able to forgive them and accept
that
you get an apology?
There's been a few. I mean, I forgive everyone. It's the forgetting that's the issue.
Yeah.
So there's been, I've had people over the years that have done really, really terrible, awful, bad things to me. But I don't want an apology from them. I've forgiven them. It's not, when I say I forgive, it's not that I'm going to be friends with that person again or I want that person anywhere near me ever again, because that's not the case. But I can still forgive them, and you know, their life and what they do is, that's their decisions. If they want to make decisions to hurt people and then just, you know, feel like skipping off into the sunset, that's their action, it's not mine. I don't have to do that. More power to them. But
I think it is being the bigger person. And also, I think what I've learned as well through my therapy is empathy. And I think hurt people. That makes
definitely
sense.
Absolutely.
You don't know what's happening in their own lives. If they've had depression or they've had difficult events, traumatic events, which has kind of caused their reason to, I don't know, hurt people as well, or disappoint people. You don't know. So
absolutely,
I think sometimes we have to maybe take a step back and think, well, I don't know what's going on in your life right now. Obviously there's, like, I think now when people disappoint me or they hurt me, I kind of take a step back and think, okay, this is not necessarily something I want to be around or I like. Maybe someone's done you wrong, or maybe you're hurting right now. So, I'm going to give you some space, and that I'll just kind of distance myself from that person. Because we don't know everybody's background and what their stories are, and whether they've had a difficult upbringing or anything like that. I think you talk about empathy as well in your book, and sometimes just being understanding and not necessarily quick to judge and think, right, okay, you know, this person is a nasty, horrible person and that's it. I'm going to hate this person. You know, we don't know what's happened in their past. We don't know if they've been abused. We don't know if they're experiencing a bereavement or anything. I think that's, with my therapy, I've learned to be a bit more empathetic towards other people, even if they're not nice.
And that's part of growth as well. You know, it's part of growth to get to the level where you can kind of do that, where we can say, actually, you can take that pause and you can be like, I don't need to react to that person's hurt. You can only give hurt if you've got hurt to give. You can only give anger if you've got anger to give. You can only give, you know, a traumatic expression if you've got that trauma in you to give. So, you know, people can only give what they've got. So if you a lot of the time we see people walking around and it's all about projection. So they're projecting what's in them. If they're, and we all do it. Like, even if if we get angry for a moment, that's because, and we might take it out on someone, that's because we're angry. It's in us. So we're projecting it outwards. I think the internet, I always say, look, it's both a blessing and a curse sometimes, but I do feel that it's actually helping us to grow our empathy and understanding through a lot of the channels that are now available for us to learn about mental health and to support us in times of mental crisis. I think that as we're evolving, we are becoming less judgmental because we've got so many channels that are kind of educating us around these things. You know, that they're called depression, the common cold of the mind. So many people have had it, and it's so strange that when I was going through what I was going through and I was speaking to people, and they were like, oh, I've also had that, and you know, I was actually on this medication and I did it. And it's people you would never in a million years think would have ever had an issue in their life. They're so together and stable, and it's like, wow, like so many people are going through these things, and so many of them suffer in silence. And it's just, I think it's great that we're getting to a point now where there's not so much stigma involved in it, and not so much kind of, it's not all cloak and dagger. You know, it's not like the older generation, I think, particularly.
Definitely.
They were told to kind of button it up. So a lot of them went through life with these issues and they pass them down. You know, it's generational. They'll you know, pass the trauma in them because they haven't got it out. They'll pass it down to their kids. And then, you know, it's like, it's at the moment, I feel like we're getting to a stage where we're recognizing those things, even in the older generations. We can recognize that, you know, that behavior is not okay. And it's, you know, I think it's a positive progress, because the younger generation will then, you know, not have to deal with that kind of bustling it off. They'll be okay.
I think just being vocal about it as well. I mean, I just have so much admiration for young people who are vocal mm-hmm. about their feelings and mm-hmm. are able to express to their parents if something isn't right. And they're able to nip it in the bud as early as possible, rather than, you know, picking up these habits of hiding your emotions and then trying to cover it up through addictions like alcohol and smoking and all sorts. You know, if you nip it in the bud as early as possible, then you're not going to use those sort of behaviors later on in life to try and, you know, make yourself feel better, I guess.
Definitely. I mean, people, they can end up self-medicating with drugs, and you know, it's definitely something that you know, we kind of as a society need to take on board. But it's okay to speak out. It's better out than in. It really is. Just let it out.
Absolutely. And, you know, then when you talk about it, other people will be able to connect. And then hopefully mm-hmm. with this episode as well, there are people listening in that are going through it, or, you know, perhaps struggling to reach out at the moment, or feeling alone and mm-hmm. Not quite sure why they're having these feelings and not sure who to reach out to. So absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think if the more people can talk about it, then hopefully we're making a difference to people's lives as well. Absolutely. Okay. And I mean, just going back earlier, you know, you mentioned about your sister, and, you know, mm-hmm. sadly she passed away, and with lockdown, you went through a lot of difficult events. How have you coped with grief? I mean, do you find it easy opening up about it? You know, every year that goes by, do you find it gets easier, or is it still difficult opening about it?
I mean, it's difficult. It's not difficult so much now, because I've processed it now. It was at first, and to be honest with you, as they say, grieving is not linear. So it's not one straight line. There are times when I felt like, okay, I can speak about it now, and I'd start speaking about her to someone, and I'd just burst into tears, and I'd think, oh, I thought I was over it. I thought I'd healed. You know, I thought I'd processed it, but I hadn't. And that was happening for about 2 years, going back and forth. And then, like, the third year, I started to kind of think, well, why am I still bursting into tears every time? And then I started to process it. Grief's so difficult. It's such a difficult emotion to deal with. But, you know, it is possible to kind of... what I did was actually place the positive memories of her and all the good times. And I kind of pieced that together into kind of my mind map and my mind image of her. And it helped. And just remembering what an amazing person she was, you know, her happiness, the things that she's given to me throughout life, the joy that she brought into my life, the you know, a sense of humor and all of those kinds of things, and just what a great person she was. And those, you know, at this point in my life now, I can say that I can openly speak about it without, there's no upset there now. It's more of a, I'm glad that I knew her, I'm glad she was my sister, and I'm glad I had her for all that time, rather than a loss. It's still a loss, of course, but it's not painful now.
I was just going to talk about my nan, who passed away quite a while ago now, which was unexpected. I think there are times where I do feel a bit down, feel a bit upset that she's gone, she's no longer here. But I do, like yourself, I just think about the great times that we had together, and what I've kind of learnt from her as well, and just remember all of the important things that I've learned. Like, for example, she said to me, well, if something happens and it's completely out of your control and there's nothing you can do about it, don't stress over it. Like, if it's out of your control, don't stress out of it. Like, if there's something out of your hands and you can't control it, then there's nothing you can do. Don't stress out. And I've continued, like, every year, it crosses my mind. And yeah, like, I thank her for that, because it's enabled me to not stress about things which are, you know, very little or minor. I'm thinking, you know, if it's out of my control, why worry about it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, yeah, definitely. You know, you've got so much energy wasted in worrying. And when you learn, like, the kind of coping mechanisms to get rid of it, you see how much energy you waste, like, worrying about things that you can't change. So I can definitely, I definitely think that's great advice. Like, I love that.
Yeah, so yeah, something that I'll take with me. But I think also, like, although it gets easier for me anyway, I think there are still times where I might have a setback and have a bit of a cry. Because she's, you know, she's not here anymore. But then, yeah, I kind of pick myself up and then think of all the positives as well. I think you mentioned, and I really love this quote near the end of the book, Bob Marley once said, you never know how strong you are until being strong is your own choice. And I absolutely love this quote. I'm tempted to post this on Facebook as well, because it's a really, really excellent quote here. And I think, you know, with all our trials and tribulations, it makes us stronger, you know,
absolutely.
And these events which are difficult, which we thought we'd never get past, we'd never get through. Absolutely makes us stronger people.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, sometimes, you know, throughout what I went through, there were times when I was like, well, I'm not gonna make this, this is it now, this is the end, like, I'm not gonna, you know. And it's, as he says, like, being strong when it's your only choice, but to keep fighting and to keep pushing through and to keep powering on and to keep just trying, you know, you do it, and eventually it builds you back up. Like, I can remember when I was in, like, the depths of depression, and I was like, I cannot find one single thing to be happy about. Everything looks dark. Everyone looks miserable. Everything looks, like, pointless. I had no motivation. I didn't even want to get out of bed. And then I just thought, well, I'm just going to try and find just one little tiny positive thing a day. And at first I couldn't, but then I kept trying and searching. And it would just be the tiniest, tiniest little thing, like, oh, sun's out, you know, and that might be the only thing I could have found for that day. But then I built it up. So that little ray of light, I just built and built and built on. And, you know, you looking back at some of the things that we go through, we probably would be surprised. I mean, I've been very surprised at some of the things that I've gone through and survived. But I think everyone doesn't really realize how strong we actually are in our core. Until like, you know, that comes up, something like that comes up, or something like, you know, a challenge comes up, and they get through it. And, you know, I love that quote. I think it's fantastic. And it really rang true with me when I heard it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, when I read that, like, I literally just had a tingle in the back of my spine, because I thought, wow, this is an excellent quote, and I can just relate so much to it. And I think sometimes we're hard on ourselves, you know, when we have really bad days, and we think, well, hang on, why am I beating myself up? Because I've come a long way, and you know, 3-4 years ago, I'm not in the situation I am now. So come on, I need to give myself credit. And I think sometimes we need to kind of look back and think, right, 3 years ago, or 3-4 years ago, or during lockdown, this is where I was. And now look at where I am now. I think sometimes we have to give ourselves more credit and try to not beat ourselves up as much as we do.
Definitely. Absolutely. We don't give ourselves the compassion we deserve a lot of the time. You know, we can be strong for like 364 days of the year and then down for one, and we'll only focus on the one day that we were down. It's like, well, hold on. You've just done 364 days of being amazing. You can't let that cloud. That doesn't take away all of your strength for all those days and all your brilliance. But yeah, we are hard on ourselves sometimes. Again, like, you know, like the quote says, we're much stronger than what we think we are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing book, Mel.
Thank you.
Those who are listening today, just go and read it. I think the link will be below. And you can order it. You think you can get it from Amazon, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the Kindle edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kindle edition and the paperback as well. So have a read. It's an amazing book. And yeah, just congratulations on the book. And I'm sure your sister would be extremely proud of it as well.
I hope so.
Okay. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. My name's Senthen. You've been listening to Breaking the Mold.
In this series, I'll be creating a safe space to allow friends and family to talk about their life changes, the trials and tribulations they've faced, and how taking on a new path has allowed them to be their authentic self. So until next time, you've been listening to Breaking the Mold with Sentho. Stay true, guys.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.